The views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Hunco Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Hunco Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings and mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Hernco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Hernco Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories. Watch them
free! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Oh, there we are, we're on. Hey, and we're back. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world. And welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. Yes, it's, wow. I'm sitting here. I'm a little bit speechless. Tons of stuff going in front of me. Don't forget this little cafe that is located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. Got a quiet night tonight, but I got a few people in the room that I probably will get up on the mic here. My buddy Bumbledore from down in West Virginia. And I believe he's in West Virginia right now. Poor guy. He's amongst all of us out there who have been looking for work and finding none, traveling the country, going insane. Well, at any rate, hey, I want to wish everybody out there a happy new year. Let's hope this year gets a little better than the last one. It doesn't look like it's going to get too much better until we get to the ejection election of 2010, which has been dubiously named this so far by my buddy here, Mr. Bumbledore, but it's that time, folks. Time to get them all out of there, because of the crap that's going on behind the scenes is just unbelievable. The nuttiness, the things that is just plain old crazy happening out there in the world, folks. We got this one tonight down off of CQ Politics, and it's unauthored, but it's pretty much telling you the truth here. I would believe, at any rate, this is the House and Senate appear increasingly likely to bypass a formal conference committee on a health care bill and instead work out an informal agreement between top Democrats as a way to avoid further parliamentary delays by Senate Republicans. And top Democrats probably will have the House call up the Senate-passed version of the health care bill and add the new compromise language via an amendment. Then the bill would go back to the Senate to be cleared. Isn't that nice? A top Senate leadership aide confirmed the plan today, elements of which have been under consideration for several weeks. But an aide to a House Democratic leadership would not go as far, saying only that the idea was under discussion and that members would talk about it this week. Now, there are several reasons for Senate Democrats to favor this plan. Excuse me, the process of going to conference requires three separate motions in the Senate, all of which can be filibustered and which would significantly delay Democrats' goal of getting a bill to President Obama by late January or early February. GOP resistance last month forced Senate Democratic leaders to keep the chamber in session for the second most consecutive days in its history in order to pass a health plan. The Senate passed its legislation on the morning of Christmas Eve by a vote of 60 to 39. The House bill passed in that chamber on November the 7th by a vote of 220 to 215. The House has yet to agree to an informal conference process, partly because it could give the chamber less leverage. Senate Democrats have noted that unified Republican opposition to their health care bill makes it an imperative for the House to accept the Senate bill more or less whole. House chairman and leadership are here this week. There's a meeting tomorrow on the House side to discuss it, said a senior aide to House Democratic leadership. The aide said that the full House Democratic caucus will meet on Thursday, with some members joining in by phone, to discuss the House strategy moving forward. We'll go from there, said the aide. Now, you just gotta love it. You just gotta love it. It's, what's going on here is they're gonna try to slide the rest of this through. Now, of course, you know, they're trying to slide it through because the process here, of the House conference and the House, or the House Senate conference here, it's going to need procedural moves coming out of the Senate. Matter of fact, there's three, votes that they'll have to take on it. And exactly what the three votes are, I'm not sure, but I can imagine, you know, one of them just to say, let's do this. You know, another one says, well, who are we going to pick on it? And that's going to be the tough one right there, because there's no way they're going to, you know, let it go without some Republicans sitting on it. So what they're going to do here is just act like Democrats and go right back there, exclude any Republican input on this whatsoever, just get themselves a bill together, you know, and then they're going to try to find a way to ram it through. It's, and it's going to be a toughie. Now, the Senate, of course, being very locked up and having to, you know, well, let's face it, they got all their payoffs in there, which is all they were really held out for, are not in a good position to get anything else passed beside this. You know, these guys, the ones who took money in this, especially the guy from out in Nebraska and Mary Landrieu and whatnot, who were actually against the bill, holding out for this money, have gotten their money. You know, and it's, you know, the bill passing forward from here, or them getting their money, does not rest on the bill passing forward from here. So who knows? Might be more bribes involved, whatnot. But we got to wait and see what kind of amendments get attached to it from the House. Now, all you listeners to the show out there realize, you know, look, we went through this quite a bit, you know, with the House bill. And the House bill, of course, you know, being nothing more than just a big turnover of the health insurance system over to a few select health insurance companies, is not exactly what they had in mind. Now, of course, you know, there is one big attraction to all of this, you know. What it means is that, you know, once they turn it over to them, basically, they can wash their hands of the deal. You know, and that's going to be the shittiest part of the whole deal. We could just turn around and say, well, you know, we had to set this up, and they're just going to have to run it the way it has to be run. And I can hear all kinds of excuses coming down the road here. Now, of course, none of these people are going to be around to see this come into play, you know, should it survive the ejection election of this year, which I firmly doubt at this point in time. Congress having the lowest approval ratings it has ever had. I think we're looking at, you know, Rasmussen's reporting somewhere around 17-18%, somewhere along that line. These people are all going to go. We will have a new Congress come November of this year. And high time, too. And high time for it. It's had to happen at some point in time. They've just got to get them out of there. This group that's in there now is just too beholden to the people that got them elected, all the people that gave them the money. You know, basically the big insurance companies, the big insurance underwriters. You know, basically the people who have helped write the House version of this bill. And, you know, whoever it was that was involved along with the Senate version of the bill here. Which, once again, you know, like I said before, is nothing more than a huge takeover of the health insurance in this country. You know, and actually giving the health insurance companies complete control over health care. I mean, how ridiculous can it be? You know, this is that system that says, oh, it's you and your doctor who are going to decide. No, it's going to be you, your doctor, and the government-appointed insurance agency that will be deciding. And, of course, none of the rest of these people have bothered to look over at the House bill yet and see what's actually in it. You know, for the money that you will be forced to pay, you know, and especially should you find yourself in a position of, yeah, I'm a low-paid worker, but, I make too much in order to qualify, so I'm going to have to go with whatever it is the government's going, whatever the government's going to charge me with. They're going to find themselves in a position of, you know, being covered for, what, $5,000 worth of medical care. That's it. You know, that's all it covers. If you're married, it's going to, and have a family, well, it'll cover $10,000 worth of medical care. Now, exactly what do you plan on getting for that? You know, nothing. You know, beyond that, it's going to come out of your pocket or come from somewhere. Now, what I would expect to see, you know, within the first 6 months, is all these $10,000 policies just, you know, getting paid out in full, being done. And then people either being A, turned down, or a huge swamp of bills coming into the federal government that they're going to have to raise taxes for. You know, any way you look at it, it's not going to come down sweet. It's not going to come down good. This is not going to come down where it's going to cover all Americans. It's a farce. You know, it's typically a farce. This is nothing more than a scheme for insurance companies to make out like the fat cats that they already are. And what's best about it is they'll never be able to be put out of business. You know, losing money doesn't mean a damn thing to them. Because, hey, any losses incurred by a qualified health benefit provider, as stated in the House version of the bill, will be reimbursed by the federal government. And, of course, where does the Fed? Well, it gets it from the Federal Reserve as a loan. And what will the rest of us be doing? Well, we'll be paying interest forever on that loan. You just got to love it. But, yeah, you just got to love it. There's crap coming down here. And I'll tell you, these guys are really, really... Who knows? They're driving themselves up a wall. They're driving me up a wall. And things are not getting any better. Now, of course, the stock market went up today, so we're all jumping up and down over that. But on top of that, what do we get today? Well, one off of McClatchy Newspapers by Chris Adams. Banks and other lenders are still foreclosing on America's homes at a rate that's outpacing the Obama administration's main effort to stem the crisis. In fact, while the Treasury Department's Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP, has started the mortgage modification process on almost 760,000 homeowners who are at risk of losing their homes, less than 5% of those workouts have become permanent, government data show. HAMP has made only limited progress for 9 months now, and the residential foreclosure crisis continues to mount, said Richard Nieman, superintendent of banks in New York State and a member of the Congressional Oversight Panel that was formed to monitor the Treasury Bank bailout funds that supported the mortgage program. He was appointed to the post by the Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives. Another member of the Oversight Panel, U.S. Representative Jeb Head Sarling, a Texas Republican and a critic of the bailout bill, called the mortgage program a failure. In a recent report, he said the administration's efforts have assisted only a small number of homeowners while drawing billions of involuntary taxpayers' dollars into a black hole. Yeah, Hen Serling has recently left this panel. The Treasury Department acknowledges that its program needs to do a better job of making hundreds of thousands of trial modifications permanent. But an official said the program is making progress and is on track to meet many of its goals. I think that if you go back and look at what we said we would do in February, we are on track to meet the president's goals, said Michael Barr, an assistant treasury secretary who helps oversee the nation's main modification program. We are not going to be able to prevent every foreclosure in the country. Yep, the question is, can you prevent any of them? Yeah, more than 5 million mortgages have been caught in foreclosure proceedings since the economy began slipping in 2007, and an estimated 8 million to 13 million more could follow in the next 5 years. The Treasury's goal is to help modify 3 million to 4 million mortgages in 3 years, but only about 1% of that number have completed the process. The Treasury program could spend as much as $75 billion helping homeowners avoid foreclosure. The program seeks to pay three parties: the company that services a loan, the bank or investor that owns the loan, and the homeowner, if they rearrange the mortgage so the homeowner's monthly payment is more manageable. One of the central problems, the administration and its critics agree, is the slow pace of finalizing the modifications it started. Under the program, mortgage servicers, companies that collect mortgage checks and pay the bank property tax and insurance, arrange the modifications. Through November, the Treasury Department said that more than 3 million homeowners have been sent information on potential modifications, and that 1 million of them have been. Of those, 759,000 trial modifications have been started, but just 31,382 have been finalized into what the Treasury calls permanent modifications. A part of that low conversion rate is to be expected because a modifications trial period is 3 months long. If a homeowner remains current on his or her payments and provides all the necessary documents, then the modification can become permanent. A trial modification that started in October, for example, wouldn't become permanent until January. However, the conversion rate is low for trial modifications that have been underway for more than 3 months. As of October 31, only 4.7% of the modifications that have been on the books for at least 3 months had become permanent. Now, while that doesn't mean that more than 95% of trial modifications begun 3 months or more earlier are failures in the panel's word, it does mean that the vast majority of trial modifications failed to convert on the schedule that the Treasury originally announced. Now, Treasury's bar said that mortgage servicers, some of them standalone companies, others units of big Wall Street banks, simply aren't doing enough to move homeowners from trial to permanent modifications. While most homeowners are making their payments once they're in trial modification, and the basic structure of the program is working, more needs to be done to push mortgage servicers to close deals, he said. It sounds really boring, but it's basic execution on the ground. You can go on and talk about this, but the problem going on here is cause these mortgages to go into default to begin with. You know, let's stop and think about this for a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Why is it that they're there? Well, it's a pretty damn simple reason. People can't pay the mortgage, right? Okay, well, why is it that they can't pay the mortgage? Well, nobody seems to be asking that question. And that's the big one. The reason that they can't pay the mortgage, obviously, is because they don't have the money for it. They don't have the money for it. Why not? Because there's no work. That's why the dipshits, when are they going to wake up and realize that? All right, until you can get everyone in this country back up and working again, then, you know, just keep on looking for this to keep on cooking here. Because it's not going to happen. This is the silliness in the world. You're going to turn around and say, yes, we can help you save your home. You can cut your payment in half. Yeah, but you see, my pay has been cut down to zero. You know, it's not like I'm still working and I'm only collecting half a paycheck. Okay, I am now collecting absolutely, positively zero. All right, my unemployment insurance has run out. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, this is what, you know, the reality of the world is waking, is coming true here. You know, there's no way in hell they're going to be able to do this. And I'll tell you, you know what the worst part about all this is underneath here? Is that eventually the federal government, okay, will be coming in here and helping these people stay in their homes. Except that it won't be their homes anymore. And that is the dirty little secret that they're working themselves into. If you'll note, there hasn't been a damn thing done to help bring any jobs back into this country. All right, they were crying for more small business association loans, more SBA loans to come on out there. All right, well, that sounds fine. You cried for it, okay. President Obama got, you know, members of the banking industry in there and said, well, we have to get you guys to loosen up these loans. And they all sat there and nodded their heads. Yeah, 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 a bunch of turkeys. Right, now they're going to do that. And then what happens? You know, nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because, you know, getting loans out there to start up businesses, you know, well, how's that going to work? We are in a bad catch-22 situation right here. You know, this is a very, very bad catch-22 situation. The best brains in this country, the ones that are the most capable of producing the jobs, all right, are heading out of this country, heading overseas, or just refusing to get into it at all. And it's, and you can't blame them, because we have too uncertain of a future. You know, who in this climate right now would want to bother to try to open up a new business? I mean, if you have money that you could sink into a business, it's money that you say, I better hang on to just to pay my own bills. You know, are you going to go out and take a loan out on something with knowing full well that, you know, hey, this economy being where it's at, I'm not going to be able to support this. I'm not going to be able to make the payments on this bill. Of course you're not. You know, are you going to go out there and twist people's arms to take SBA loans? Hell no, not in the climate that we got cooking out there right now. It just ain't going to happen. We are looking at, what do you call it? It's, you know, just plain old nuttiness going on out there. And where do you go from here? It's I don't know. What can I say? Folks, I'll tell you something. Just plain insane. That's all there is to it. Okay, trying to take care of something here. It ain't quite working, but we'll just put that off till later there. You know, it's a matter here of this economy having to turn around. Now look, there's a few different factors that are causing these jobs to go overseas. A few different factors. All right, number one, biggest one that's out there, okay? And I don't care what anybody says. It's taxes. You know, there's a lot of people out there who are arguing this point with me, saying, look, business goes over there to save money on labor. Well, now stop and think about this. I want you to understand something, okay? That when labor prices are going up, they're going up because of inflation. When do you stop and realize one thing, that inflation is indeed and in fact a hidden tax? You know, it's a hidden tax, all right? So it's the same damn thing. You know, either way you look at it, you can't blame them. They are paying a hidden tax. This whole business of inflating the monetary supply and going out and doing this is doing nothing more than devaluing the currency in a huge way. And it's running up tons and tons and tons of debt. And the fact of the matter is, there's just no getting away from that debt having to be paid somewhere along the line, which means higher prices for goods, higher prices for services, and less actual income from the sale of these goods and services. And people are looking at this saying, what the hell am I going to stay here for? You know, there's no reason for it, none whatsoever. Why should I open up a business in this country where I'm going to have to pay these high labor costs due to the hidden tax of inflation, and then on top of that, having to pay 35% to 38% of taxes on top of this? You know, I'm going to have to pay my corporation taxes, and I'm going to have to pay my personal taxes on top of that. Why, when I can go to China and just pay 25%, flat tax, don't worry about another thing, regulations, everything else taken care of. It's a no-brainer, all right? And you might even be able to get yourself into Malaysia or Indonesia or some other Pacific island out there and find yourself paying even less taxes than that, with a hungry, ready, and willing workforce able to show up every day and go to work for you. No, it's almost a no-brainer. So until we get things changed out here, you know, forget this mortgage foreclosure crisis. You know, and once again, don't forget the bottom of this here, where I was leading with all this. What's going to end up happening here? You can mark my words. I don't think you're going to see it by the end of this year, but in 2011, they're going to make a move towards this. Provided we don't get Congress changed, I think Congress gets changed out, things will change. But fact of the matter is, 70% of the mortgages in this country are underlined by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, what have you. These people will be staying in their homes. It's just that the mortgage money that they will be paying will be going directly to the federal government. That's right, folks. One of Thomas Jefferson's worst fears is about to be realized in this country. All right, where the people of this country wake up and find that all of their land has been confiscated by the huge corporation, federal government of the United States of America, and we have all become tenants on the land that our fathers shed their blood for. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that a wonderful thing? it's insane. Oh, you're right, exactly there, Bumbledore. On top of everything else that the employers in this country got to pay, right, Social Security matching, health care, you betcha. All the rest of that, on top of everything else, what we're up against here is just an economy that is headed for a disaster. You know, despite what the stock market is going to do on a daily basis. You know, you're going to see people in there now, start of the new year, some object of hope, some unfounded reasoning for hope, and it's going to start get people in there to start buying it up. And you're going to have guys like George Soros overseas who don't care, who will buy it up just to watch it go up, just to give everyone that false sense of security, and then come marching back in at one point in time when he started to take majority control of a lot of these companies and turning them around and running them as he sees fit, or just putting them out of business altogether, you know, getting us onto the whole world socialist bandwagon here. But I make no mistake about it, and our government and the clowns that we have got in Congress right now, either seem oblivious or complicit to it. Either way you look at it. But it's just plain nuts. America as we know it, is it gone yet? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see come November this year. The ejection election of 2010 is coming, folks. All right, other things out in the news out there. Stuff going back and forth. Where's the one? Oh, here's a good one, folks. You guys are going to love this. Federal officials, this is by Andrew Miga, down off the Associated Press. And this, by the way, the usual disclaimer, all articles read on this program are here for entertainment, discussion, and or educational purposes only. Federal officials today agreed to a request by two Indian tribes for special protections for Nantucket Sound, a move that could delay construction of a proposed wind farm off of Cape Cod. Now, the National Park Service said the sound is eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places as a significant traditional, cultural, historic, and archaeological property. The Mashpee and Aquanaw Wampanoag tribes say the designation, which could come with new regulations for activity on the sound, is needed to preserve this tribe's sacred rituals. You gotta love this. You get the sacred rituals. And exactly what are these sacred rituals? They're sitting on the beach, they're smoking dope. You know what it is. You know, I know what it is too. The Wampanoag, the tribe that welcomed the pilgrims in the 17th century and is known as the people of the first light. Practice sacred rituals requiring an unblocked view of the sunrise. All right, okay. Instead of eating mushrooms, too, right? That view won't exist if the Cape's wind project's 130 turbines, each over 400 feet tall, are built several miles from the Cape Cod shore across a 25-mile swath of federal waters. The turbines would be visible to Wampanoag in Mashpee and on Martha's Vineyard. Tribal rituals, including dancing and chanting, take place at secret sacred sites around the sound at various times, such as the summer and winter solstices and when an elder passes. The tribes also say their ancestors' remains are buried on Horseshoe Shoal, where the turbines would be built. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, who must still sign off on a federal permit before the project can move forward, said Monday he was beginning a final review of the project. America's vast offshore wind resources offer exciting potential for our clean energy economy and for our nation's efforts to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, said Salazar. But as we begin to develop these resources, we must ensure that we are doing so in the right way and in the right places. Salazar said he would bring interested parties together next week to discuss ways to minimize and mitigate Cape Wind's potential impacts on historic and cultural resources. He said if agreement cannot be reached by March 1 on ways to do that, he would be prepared to take the necessary steps to bring the permit process to a conclusion. Park Service decision is the latest twist in a long, bitter public fight over the plans on the project. Now, this is funny. Now, I go along with a lot of this here. I'd like to see a wind farm go up just as much as the next guy. Just like to see how it would work out. You know, we're going to need a lot of experimentation in these phases before we find something that may or may not work. Got good, steady winds. You got the trade winds that hit out there. It should be able to do a good job. But Wampanoag Indians holding it up. But the one thing in here that really kills me is that this clown thinks we're going to somehow or another, with this wind farm off of Cape Cod, reduce our dependence on foreign oil. Now, Mr. Salazar, let me straighten you out on something here. Up here in New England, we don't use any foreign oil whatsoever to produce electricity. Okay, what we have got cooking up here, my friend, are coal-powered plants. And there's quite a few of them. They're around. They've been here for some time. And those are what is providing electricity. All right, since the nuclear plants have been closing down, you know, the one up in Seabrook, and there was another one north of here, that have been closed down and shut down and whatnot over the last 20 years, coal-fired plants have been coming in and taking their place. Now, Mr. Salazar, I think the next people you need to be watching from here is the coal lobby. You should be looking at this thing here and figure out where it's going from there. Yeah, you just gotta love it. All right, welcome to all the guys who just stopped into the room. Team USA, Robert Goddard, always good to hear from you. But folks, listen, we're at the bottom of the hour here, and I got to take a short break. So we'll be right back. Got more news for you, second half of the show. You're listening to the Politics Cafe with me. My name is Mark Belcher, and we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
What I learned from watching TV after school. 1. If you fall madly in love with a great guy, make sure he isn't your best friend, your best friend's ex-boyfriend, your ex-boyfriend's best friend, your ex-best friend's boyfriend, or somebody named Seth. Hello. 2. Never leave home without a wooden stake, lip gloss, and a push-up bra. 2A. Platform shoes are always a plus. Okay. 3. If you find a note in your locker that asks you to meet a secret admirer in an abandoned shipyard, do not go. It really smells like fish there.
Hey, want to get more out of your teenage years? Click on www.weprevent.org and learn how to help make a difference in your neighborhood. Tutor younger kids, help clean up a community park, or even start a teen corps. All these things help make your world a safer and better place to live, as well as making you a better person. Click on weprevent.org or call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out what you can do. A public service message from McGruff, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
All right, next question is for Caroline. Caroline, if you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
Aloha, this is Bill Sage of Wiley and Sage, and you're listening to Hearn Net Radio. Music and talk, just one click away. Operators are standing. Bye now. Disclaimers not included. Your mileage may vary if rash persists here. Dr. Kendall sold separately.
And we're back. You're listening to Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. Yeah, it's Diamond Dave, even though you have been adding a lot of invective to the room, just hit something on the... Hit a big one on the head there, yeah. 10 million jobs are going to be in Shanghai. And it's not a pretty sight. Not a pretty sight. Things got to get turned around here somehow or another, you know. But what you got to do, what we really got to do is just change out the Congress. You know, more than anything else, cut this president's legs out from underneath of him. Get rid of these boobs in here that are trying to help people and destroying everything in the process. And like the nuns told us way back when, it's, yeah, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I'll tell you, these people, nobody's got any better intentions than the crowd that's in there now. You just got to love it. But it'll go on and on. You know, I see no break in this, not for a little bit, you know, not until we get the two parties out of there. You know, a lot of people out there talking about how they, you know, this should be a big boom for the Republicans and how the Republicans can take a stand on this and how they can get things back, you know. And I get a lot of people I'm talking to feel confident that somehow or another the Republicans are just going to worm their way back in here, you know, by default. And I'll tell you something. This was the last election that was won by default in 2010. You know, and that's really what it was all about. You know, make no mistake about it. This was a hate George Bush and hate Republicans election. And it's got to change. It really does. Yeah, Ezra, I'm with you 100%. The 16th and the 17th Amendments. And that's what, this is what people need to run on. You know, they've got to get in there and turn around. Look, I'm going to vote for the guy that's going to do just exactly like Bumble was telling us during the break there. You know, take that Department of Energy and revamp it, period, completely. You know, instead of being a holdup to the process of energy exploration and energy development, you know, it should be one that is moving forward here. It should be doing what it was, commissioned to do, get us off of foreign oil. You know, find the alternative means, get the alternative means working in there. Nah, they ain't going for all that yet. What the hell, you know? It's like doing anything else. Now, personally, the guys that I'm going to vote for are the ones that are going to say we're going to cut that Department of Energy down to zip, you know, down to being nothing more than finding the best plans out there and promoting them, period. That's it. An advertising agency is all it should be. And I'm also going to be looking for the guys that are going to be sitting there taking the Department of Education and closing it entirely. Now, all you clowns out there saying, oh, that Mark Belcher guy, he don't want anybody to have an education. Well, you know, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to agree with that once more at all. But I will tell you this. That until we get the federal government out of the education business, it's going to go the same way as health care. You know, at some point in time, it's going to become so expensive and so costly that no one will be able to afford an education. Now, I'm also here to tell you that there are many, many people out there who are getting an education who have absolutely no use for it, who have wasted it. And I meet too many of these people on a daily basis. Oh, yeah. What are you doing? Oh, I'm a waiter up there at the pizza house. Really? Geez, why don't you go to college and, you know, learn something? Oh, no, no. Oh, I got a college degree. I've got a master's in sociology. I just can't find a job. So, in other words, you wasted, you know, 6 years of your life and hundreds of thousands of dollars of your parents' money to get a worthless degree that would get you nothing in the end. And there's just too much of this going on out there. It's just insane. It's, there's just too many people out there. I mean, you know, all the gardeners around here have all got degrees. You know, all the waiters and all the waitresses and all the restaurants around here have all got degrees. You know, for what? Well, an education is something they can never take away with you. Or never take away from you. Yeah. Okay, but what has it done for you? Where have you gone with your education? You know, what's happening? You know, well, they sit there and look, I don't know, I'll find something in it someday, I think. Yeah, right. All right, now we got another coming down here. We're talking about taxes. You're going to see a little changes coming up here. Now, this is by Stephen Orlemacher off the AP. The IRS plans to require tax preparers to pass a test and register with the government to better police a largely unregulated industry used by most taxpayers. Now, Mr. Stephen Orlemacher, I'm going to stop you right here. Let me explain something to you, okay? Tax preparers already have to pass tests, and they already have to register with the government, all right? Because most taxpayers out there do not use anyone other than a CPA. Okay, that is a certified public accountant. All right, now this is the bullshit that comes down the road here out of the government that really winds me up. Now, the Internal Revenue Service says there could be more than 1 million people offering tax preparation services. Most offer sound advice, IRS Commissioner Doug Shulman says, but many don't, and the agency knows little about them. Bullshit. The new regulations announced today won't be in effect for the current filing season. Individual tax returns due April 15th. But Shulman said tax preparers will be held to higher standards in future years as the IRS steps up its oversight to help reduce fraud and errors. Taxpayers will get improved service and enhanced standards from tax preparers, and they'll have less risk that they'll get bad advice, which means you're going to be paying more taxes. The tax preparation industry will get more consistency and a level playing field. You got to love that. It's already there. Shulman said he hopes to have all paid tax preparers registered by the 2011 filing season. Preparers will be given about 3 years to meet competency requirements, though there is much work to be done to develop standards and tests. Eventually, tax preparers will be required to complete annual training and will be subject to penalties for unethical conduct, Shulman said. Taxpayers will be able to check the credentials of preparers on a public IRS database. We think this is incredibly important to the entire tax system, that when people pay good money for a tax return preparer, they don't get bad advice, Shulman said. And I know this is such crap. You know, anybody who gets bad advice from a tax preparer gets audited. Gets his tax returns kicked back to him, gets him told to do them over again, and if he had, unless of course he's had a CPA do it, you know. Now once you've went to somebody that did a bad job, and how would you know if he did a bad job? This is the thing, you know. Here's the point. Look, if he did a bad job and it was in the government's favor, do you think the government is going to tell anyone about it? No, they're going to keep the money and go up their sleeve. That's all they're going to do. They don't care. They got more money. Alright, if he did a bad job and you were getting too much money back from it, well, they stop it now, don't they? Each and every time. Alright, now there are some damn slick ones out there to know which ones will raise the red flags at the IRS and which ones won't. Alright, but it is, you know, them forming another whole industry around their convoluted tax system is killing me. You know, this is bullshit. You're out there reforming tax preparers and the way they do things instead of reforming the goddamn tax system. Now, this to me seems heinous at best. I mean, I'm sorry, but we have got a tax system out there that is just totally and completely unfair. It is unjust. All right? Liberty and justice for all gets thrown out the window with the tax system. All right? This is no longer a free country or a republic when it comes down to the tax system. It's nothing more than a tyranny when it comes to this. It's just absolutely, positively ridiculous. And the damage that it causes is heinous. we need to get to a point here in time when we get to the ejection election, and this is one of the big things that I hope to see, is that, you know, a flat tax come in. And I am all for this flat tax. You know, I would not be adverse to Neil Bortz's flat tax, because I don't think it's a bad idea the way it works out. You know, I think there's some sticky points in it that might cause inflation in the long run that I think they could work out of there. But as far as a value-added tax to goods and services, and make it a flat one, payable at the time of transaction and done with, I'm sorry. It's not going to be fair until that happens, is the way I look at it. I mean, everybody want, you know, I've gone over this once before, and I haven't done it in a long time. But I want you to stop and think about something here. You know, wealth is the only thing that you really should tax in this country. Now, a lot of people out there sitting back on their heels saying, oh, what, another one of them goddamn Democrats wants to tax the rich. No, I didn't say tax the wealthy. I said tax wealth, all right? Number one, as far as who the wealthy are and how wealthy they are or whatnot, it's nobody's goddamn business. None whatsoever. All right? The way I see it is this. You know, once you have completed a transaction, whatever you took away from that transaction has become your property. Okay? And whether or not it is to be considered wealth is nobody's business but your own. Okay, you are the only one in the world that can determine which one of your possessions can be considered as wealth and which ones can't. Because property is private. It's no one else's business how much money you got, how much land you got, how many cars you got, any of that. None of that. All right, so how is this going to work? Well, the way I see it is this. You know, when you go into the marketplace and declare your intention to sell a good or a service, or to purchase a good or a service, you are declaring wealth. All right. If you are walking into the store and saying, "Hey, I'm going to go buy that toy, or I'm going to go buy that tool, or I'm going to go buy this, or I'm going to go buy that," you are basically saying that you have got too much of something that you wish to dispose of in some manner. You know, and now that disposal will probably be included in a trade. And of course, the other person who is meeting you in that marketplace and either supplying that good or service or purchasing that good or service from you is also declaring that he has got too much of something and is now willing to trade it off for something else, willing to dispose of it. So at that point in time, that transaction, okay, where the wealth is declared as, and the wealth has been traded, is the only point in time at which taxes can lawfully be collected on it. And that, to me, I think, you know, under the law, under the common law, you know, and I'm a big guy on the common law, that's the only point in time that it's really, you know, lawful to do it. That's it. So it's going to have to come, and it's going to have to be at a point where all transactions are covered, and all transactions are covered equally. That's the big one. See, that's the trip of it here. Now, a lot of people can say, Jesus Christ, how are they going to do that? How are you going to be able to pull that off? Well, believe it or not, it's actually going to be something that's very, very simple. And now, with Neil Bortz's flat tax, he turns over all tax collection back to the states and back to the individual tax collectors out there, whose job it has been on the state and township and community level to collect taxes from the beginning of the time. All right, beginning of this country. So, you know, don't forget this, okay? These are actual officials that we can vote for. And one of them gets out of the way, he can get unelected and get back out of there. You know, that's what it needs to be done. We are already collecting sales taxes on tons of things in this country. Very, very few things are exempt from a sales tax. You know, a lot of places, labor is. But the way I see it is this, okay? Where labor is not taxed as sales, it is taxed, as a state tax on your labor, on your, you know, in your income. You know, I look at here in Massachusetts, that's 6.5%. It's high, but it's fair, you know, and that is the big kick about it. You know, as much as I can gripe and as much as I can bitch about it, it's fair, you know, or at least I know that I'm in the same boat with everybody else on the, you know, in the state here. You know, that is the point that I'm trying to make here. You know, look, you got to grumble with it. You're not grumbling with other people. I won't have the grumblies saying, hey, how come I got to pay 35% and that guy over there don't get to pay nothing? What's the difference between him and me? You know, weren't we both created by the same creator? Weren't we created with equal rights? Well, this causes a lot of dissonation here amongst people. You know, our tax system, if it has done nothing else in this country, it has formed us into a class system. You know, in a place where all men are created equal, we now have an upper class, we have a lower class, we have this huge middle class. Now, the way I see it, I don't think it should be any classes, okay? If all men are created equal, then a class society does not exist. It should not exist and should not be promoted as existing. You know, I think it's pure crap, the fact that they even bring up a class system in this country. But the way I see it is this. If you're going to tax something, the only thing that you can actually tax are transactions. I mean, after all, what is the government here to do? The government is here to protect your right to be free. Well, your freedom to do what? Well, I mean, let's face it, you know, whatever you're doing with yourself is of nobody's business, and nobody cares, you know, but, you know, it's there to help you, or at least protect your right to interact with other people that you choose in a manner that you choose. And that's the right that you should be paying for, okay? The protection that you should be paying for is your right to deal with anybody that you choose, when and so wherever you choose to do it. And that's the point that I'm trying to make when I say wealth. And I'll go back once again. Wealth is only that which is, you know, you can say yourself that you have too much of and I wish to dispose of. I wish to do something else with this portion of property. Now, don't forget, your wealth, you know, the way I say it, look, your wealth may be your time. I mean, after all, when you go into your employer, or you go into a potential employer and, you know, looking for a job, I mean, what are you stating to that employer? You may not use these words, but you're telling that employer that I have 40 hours a week that I have nothing else to do with. You know, how about I trade you my 40 hours and you trade me for a paycheck each week? You know, that's the way it works. It's a fair trade. You know, it's a trade that the two of you agreed on. And the way I look at it is this, any tax on such a transaction should be left up to, you know, as to who pays it, should be negotiable between the two parties. You know, I mean, look at it this way. You go into a store might decide to say, you know, it'd be a good way to have a sale today. Let's us pay that 5% tax on everything. So we're going to advertise in the paper today. We're not going to charge you 5% more. It's all going to be on us. Or guy wants a potential employer is trying to recruit an employee, you know, one that he knows has talents, one that's got a real good reputation for what he does. I'm like, what to say to that employee? Hey, I'll give you your $15 an hour. As a matter of fact, I'll pay the tax on it. How does that sound? You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, well, it's what Bortz didn't explain here, and Bortz's plan is not a bad plan all in all. You know, the thing about it is it's a little high. It's like, you know, he's talking about almost 24%. And the Bortz plan with his the trick to the Bortz plan is, don't forget, the Bortz plan is also a progressive plan, believe it or not, which is, you know, they put it in there in order in this thing, or at least to keep the left wing at bay. But the Bortz plan, you got a prebate. At the beginning of each month, every taxpayer's household in the country gets a check from the government. That's how the Bortz plan works. And it depends on how many people are living in your house. Now, there's a couple of good things about this, because there'll be no more homeless people, number one, okay? Because if you can put a bum into your house and give them a room, okay, you can collect $600 or $700 a month, or $450 a month, whatever it is, to pay his taxes. Something like it, something ridiculous. But it's at the beginning of each month, you get a check from the government to pay your taxes on things, to pay the 24% tax that will be on the necessary items that you need to live life. And it will go for every single member of the person living in your house. At any rate, the house is what gets the check. The head of the household, as stated on the form, will get a check. And it will go by how many people he has actually living in his house. You know, think about it. This is where you want to get your grandparents to move back in with you. You know, you want your parents. Hey, folks, how about you come back here and live with me? I could use the extra money each month. But it is a bit of a convoluted plan, and it's that prebate that, It really makes it a little sticky. But I'd advise you to go take a look at it. Now, I don't think that that plan will come back up. But I would definitely have got to see something. You know, we've got to see something. Or at least the first thing that I'm going to be electing, looking for in people that I'm going to elect this fall is somebody that's got some sort of tax reform. Because the system that we have out there now is just plain sick. You know, the industries that are growing up around the system. Let me ask you this, guys. You know, how many of you out there are watching the television and you see J.K. Harris on there? You see Taxmasters and a host of other ones out there. We have a whole industry up out there right now, okay, that has been created around getting you off of your huge tax bills, which, you know, seem to be climbing up everybody's leg around here. I mean, think about it. You know, everybody's in touch with the Fed. I mean, anybody that's making more than $100,000 a year, you know, or $200,000 a year for your typical family out there. God, think of these numbers here. Isn't it amazing? You know, it goes through your head. You sit here, you think about people that are making $175,000 a year. You know, 20 years ago, man, you'd have been amazed. It was like being a millionaire. But $175,000 a year, you know, it'll buy you a house, it'll buy you a car, and it'll keep you fed, and it'll pay your bills. But it ain't enough to put a kid through college on top of that, if you stop and think about it. You will not be able to put enough away during your lifetime to put a kid through college. You've got to be making more than that, you know, or seeking help from somewhere else. You know, where's the help come from nowadays? Oh, college loans. You know, due to the whole college loan process, which is a nightmare in itself, you know, they end up putting themselves in debt for the rest of their lives. It's insanity, you know, the debt bubble that's getting built out there is just nuts. But, you know, the point that I'm trying to make here, this is, you know, back to inflation again, you know, about $175,000 a year. Where do you go with it? Nowhere. You know, it's insane. You might be able to afford a small house. You know, I stop and think about what it was like, you know, way back when, in the late 60s, in the early 70s here. You know, I worked for a guy who was making $30,000 a year. And, you know, I was working in the gas station, pumping gas at night. I go to school all day, I come home, pump gas all night till 11 o'clock. And go out drinking and go have a blast, you know. But the guy was making $30,000 a year at a brand new 4-bedroom split level ranch home. Beautiful place in a beautiful suburb outside of Philadelphia. Drove around in new Cadillacs that he bought every two years, you know. I mean, all of it. The guy had it all. You know, I remember him being like, you know, one of the first ones we knew that bought a 25-inch color television. You know, Christ, you know, we were in the 70s before we could afford a color television in our house. But it's, it's just insane. The whole idea of the fact that now $30,000 a year is just about over the poverty level. You know, that's it, baby. You know, $30,000 a year, you are not living on your own. $30,000 a year, you're still with your parents, or you are living with someone else. You know, maybe, hopefully, somebody else that's making at least that much money so that you can afford to stay wherever the hell you're staying, because you ain't doing it on $30,000 a year. You know, it's insane. $30,000 a year, you might be left with $22,000 a year after taxes. You've got a $1,000 a month rent payment, that leaves you $10,000 a year to eat. You know, how are you going to do that? You know? Now, maybe you'll manage to eat with that $10,000, but that doesn't pay the electrical bill. That won't heat your home. You know, it's just insane out there. But this is the whole thing, and this is what we need to change out here, folks. Now, next week when I come back, I'm going to talk a little more. We're really going to get into something a little deeper next week. I'm going to go back on a rant that I had started years before that I think needs to be brought back up. And it's going to be on the whole idea of this inflation, why we have it, what it's there for, where it's taking us, and it's pretty insane, you know. It's and you know what the worst part about it all is, folks? You know, we asked for it, and then we agreed to it. Pretty sick, and it's, believe it or not, it's not our fault. It's actually the fault of many, many people who are long dead, including our own ancestors. But we'll get into that a little more next week. At any rate, do I have anything else to run over here before the top of the show tonight? It's tough to say. Yeah, but I know No. A lot of people out there, you know, I'll tell you, most of what you see in the news here today is nothing but opinion. And I'll tell you something, folks, as far as anything else, man, things are quiet. I think that's kind of a good thing. Of course, yeah, we can recap a little bit what's going on here. Guys all heard about the underwear bomber. Idiot that he is. Evidently now he has got himself a slew of lawyers. And they must have just jumped to his defense, is all I can say. This guy, from what I understand, he don't have a lot of money. His parents evidently got some money, but they're over in Nigeria. But it's a insanity of it all is here that, you know, somebody who is actually trying to kill people for some damn stupid-ass cause is, you know, now about to find out what the criminal justice system is all about here. And I think that, you know, in the end here, this guy is going to be a shining example of what's going to happen down the road. And personally, I think he's going to get away with it. I hate to say it, folks, but I think that in the end, his failed attempt at doing what he did is he's going to get away with it. They're going to ship him out of this country and ship him over to somewhere who may or may not keep him incarcerated. I think he's going to find himself exiled from wherever he was originally and left to roam free, someplace like Yemen or someplace like, who knows? Who knows? Somewhere in the Middle East, you know. He'll find his way out and around again. Guy's been a nut job, but look for this character to get let go within the next 6 months. I would almost count on it. You know, it's not a kid let Obama roam free. He is a security risk. I don't know what the hell they're going to see there. Okay, yeah, like I say, I'm going through everything here in my stack of stuff, but everything in it is basically opinions. If I'm going to give anybody's opinion on this show, it's going to be my opinion. A lot of people out there, you know, like, for car buyers, lending market sees signs of thaw. Who the hell are they trying to kid? Nobody's lending money on cars out there right now. Look, you can't look at anyone out there and say, hey, I got a stable job. That job ain't going nowhere. My money is going to be coming in. Now, I will tell you this. A long time ago, I learned from one of my illustrious sales managers. He told me there's two kinds of people in the world. There's chiefs and there's Indians. He said, the Indians, he says, they are always very subject to the economic times. Now, the chiefs, they never are. He says, the chiefs will have money through no matter what the hell the government's doing, no matter what the rest of the economy is doing, and what have you. And I managed to meet a few of these chiefs. But let me tell you something. They don't hire people, you know, and they are doing just as good now as they will be doing later on or as they were doing through any previous financial crisis. And that's because they live quite simply, own tons and tons of land, and generally are doing something that will bring them an income. And I'll tell you, one of the chiefs that I've met in the world was actually a junkyard owner. Guy wasn't going anywhere. Had nothing to worry about. Now, his junkyard was huge. You know, I wouldn't say it covered a matter of acres. I would say it covered a matter of square miles. You know, there was one point he had 5 acres that was nothing but school buses on it. But, this is the point. People like this will make it. But the fact of the matter is, these people are so few and so far between that even though they may be doing well and doing okay through a financial crisis like we've seen in this country right now, the rest of us could be doomed. And what we have to watch for at this point in time are these idiots who are out there trying to rescue us. They're trying to rescue us with too many different means, okay? Their fiat paper currency being one of them. Right, which is also one of the reasons we're in this great big mess. But it's, once again, I'm going to get to that next week. But at any rate, we have hit the top of the hour here. Time for the show to close up. Folks, I do have a good show planned for next week. I almost pulled it off tonight, but there's a couple of things that I got to get straightened out on. And but for next week, financial crisis. Getting better, getting worse. Where's it going to go? Be here at HearnCo.com. Next Monday night, 9 o'clock. And which, by the way, folks, a couple of weeks down the line here, we're not quite sure when, but the show will be moving to Saturdays, probably on a Saturday morning at some point. I got to work out the time schedule with Bob. My old buddy from the Politics Lobby 4 Network, Mr. Zan O'Neill, is moving to Saturday mornings there, too. And we're working. At any rate, HearnCo.com is going through a little bit of a revolution with some of the shows here, and I think it may be getting bigger and better, and a lot of things happen. Plus, also, I needed the extra night a week to practice with my band, which is going balls to the wall right now, folks. We're really cooking. I've got one hell of a rock band together. Actually, it's a ska band. I don't know if you guys know what ska music is, but we'll mix some rock in there with it. But it's having a lot of fun. But I've been working the ass off these guys here. I've built a fire under their tail. They actually all wanted to play tonight. I was like, no, sorry, Politics Cafe first. But at any rate, folks, the tables are once again getting piled high with the chairs. The lights are growing dim. But as always, the bar will be opened up after the cafe has closed. So I want to thank everybody for coming to listen. My name is Mark Belcher. You have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Folks, we'll see you all next week. Have a pleasant week.